allowed me to be a stern taskmaster. We added an additional book, and I want to be able to give each of the prominent Rosh Yeshiva who are speaking an opportunity to present his insights to the Rav and his Torah in full fashion, so I can't delay at any point. Our Kefet mentioned how each of the different Talmidim of the Rav took something different. I was at Yeshiva when all the Hesvedim were made by the Rebbeim in Yeshiva, and listened, and I have sat in the Shir for a number of years together with many of these Rebbeim, and they all experienced something different than I had, but not less any valid. One of the people who was in Yeshiva and Shir with me, who went to Eretz Yisrael and created Moses of Torah, and that alone reflected something that was extremely important to the Rav. All the guests that we had for the shul of the years that I was there, the one that the Rav gave greatest respect and praised his Torah to the hilt, that was a very different mentality, was Rav Neria Zecher Tzadik Livracha, because he respected the Torah that he had built. Neri was the founder of the Yeshiva Bnei Akiva in Israel, created a movement of Torah, was creative in teaching Torah to others. So I'd like to introduce a Talmud of the Rav, another chaver of mine for many years, who had a creative contribution to teaching of Torah in Israel. The listed is Rosh Yeshiva of men, his role in Torah for women, which the Rav treated as extremely important as well, which I'm not going to be here a week from now in the program for women, unless they find me back. I doubt. But even men should appreciate the role that the Rav played in ensuring that women were not removed from the world of Torah. And because to the Rav, the only way one can confront modernity was through knowledge of Torah. And a person who is a great pioneer in this direction, who will be speaking now, is Rav Chaim Bavner.
How big a time in this? I must admit that some of the things I've heard have been very interesting for me. You know, when you're there and you participate, there are always things that you don't notice. Or as Rabbi Rakevitz said, people have different visions of what is actually going on. And I think it's important, therefore, for people to get together sometime to hear what the different visions sound like. I also appreciated listening to Rabbi Reifman, because you know that the Rav was very conscious of Kavod HaTorah, but he was not conscious of the Ginune HaKavod, of the trappings of Kavod that are common in the world in which we live. And it was often a little, it was sometimes disconcerting for us as Talmidim when we would go down to the cafeteria. They still have a cafeteria? In those days they called it the Reuben Dorm. I imagine it's been renamed several times. We used to go down, you know, we used to go down, the Rav would come in and he would park himself online at the cafeteria to get food. And of course, everybody who was in front of him and who was back of him, like whoever else was on the line, was at a loss. Although to do so, all the people in front said, oh Rebbe, you can go ahead of me. It's like the Rebbe, like the world looked at him as though to say, well, I am probably ahead of you, but I don't mind standing here on line. So that the idea of kavod, a kavod haTorah for the Rav, was a very profound thing. And he would never let it get confused with the kind of trivial kavod which sometimes we're reduced to, because we simply find it difficult to relate to the gedolim or gedolei haTorah in a manner of significance. And instead of that, we find ourselves getting out of the way here, getting out of the way there, or helping with kind of menial jobs. I remember once, I'm not sure that this is what I was supposed to be talking about. I remember once I received the coveted job of driving the Rav to the airport. The Rav would go to LaGuardia Airport, where he would fly back to Boston, and it was, of course, considered to be a sign of your academic acumen if you were able to get this coveted position. And of course, you also needed a car, which perhaps is also related to academic acumen on some level or other. So I was learning at my chavrusa at the time, which is a story that has nothing to do with Rabbi Soloveitchik, but is a story nonetheless. My chavrusa at the time had somehow gotten this job on a permanent basis. And one day he couldn't do it. He was so he didn't want to give it away. You know, he didn't want to give it away to someone who he thought might try to horn in on the business. So he figured, you know, that I was indebted to him for some reason or other. So he took a chance by giving it to me. So I was the appointed driver to LaGuardia Airport for that day. I walk into the, knock on the door, you know, the appointed time comes, come in. The Rebbetzin says, La Shalom, come in. I walk in and I greet the following picture. Rabbi Soloveitchik is standing, the Rav is standing on a windowsill. On the windowsill, standing on the windowsill. The Rebbetzin is standing on the floor, pointing or shaking a hand at him, trying to get him to close the window. Right? They're leaving. You know, that's very often when you live in these big inner city type places, you close the windows when you leave. So she was trying to get him to close the window. The window was stuck. He's standing on the... and here I am aghast. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing. Like, I was just standing there in the middle of the room. So I caught myself and I said, I must take action. I mean, I can't let this be the end of the story, right? I mean, there's a story that will be written and etched in some volume that I'll never be able to escape. I said, Rebbe, I'll do it. And the Rav stops fiddling around the window and he looks down at me and he says, why? Do you think I can't do it? But this is not to say, you know, as Rabbi Reifman pointed out, that the Rav had less than the most profound sense for Kavod HaTorah. And that may be the explanation, as Rabbi Reifman suggested, that when going to Eretz Yisrael meant leaving the Shir, it became problematic for the Rav. About that, I have another story that I'm not going to tell. So maybe I'll be invited again. I'd like to say something that I learned from the Rav inadvertently. That is, not directly, but when I was learning, I was thinking, I was learning it from the Rav. After Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, there was a very significant religious moment at Kriyas Yamsuf. And that moment is described in the Torah as Vayaminu Bashem Uvimosha Avdo. And since the entire text of Torah is Emuna, and since our entire world view, being, existence, Weltanschauung, is Emuna, for the Torah to say Emuna, it must be of seminal importance. And yet, after that moment of Vayaminu Bashem, there was difficulty. Am Yisrael had difficulty in understanding for themselves what the ongoing relationship between them, the chosen people, and the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Borei HaOlam, the Kol Yochol, the Konei Shamayim VaOretz would be. And so they found themselves unable to understand. Did they have enough water? Did they have enough food? They were simply unable to understand the dimensions, the parameters of the relationship. They knew that Hashem was Hashem, Hashem Elohim. They knew that God could do anything, but they had difficulties understanding what that meant, lemaisa. The end of the parasha of Bishalach, we read of the confrontation which took place between Amalek and Bnei Yisrael, Vayava Amalek Vayilochem in Yisrael Berefidim. They came, the Amalekites, to fight against Bnei Yisrael. And you know, this is the time of Amalek. We're living in that time. As the year goes by, we change our own personalities. We're the people of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim and Sukkot and Chanukah, and now we are the people of Purim. And you know that Purim is a time of Amalek. It's a time of remembering. It's a time of reconsidering. It's a time of Amalek. It's the time of the kiyum of the mitzvah of Zohar. And the Amalekites came first at this time to meet Bnei Yisrael, and the story of the battle between Amalek and Bnei Yisrael is compelling and demands serious consideration. I would like to draw your attention to two problems of exegesis. Parshanut, I mean understanding. I'd like to understand something in the Chumash, but I have difficulty. Pasuk Yud Aleph says, "Vayaka sheyorim Moshe yodo v'govar Yisrael, v'kasha yaniach yodo v'govar Amalek." I don't understand. What is the connection? Why should Moshe Rabbeinu raising his hands make a difference? Why should the Govar Amalek and the Govar Yisrael have something to do with the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu? But you know very well that I am not the first one to ask this question. And the Mishnah already in Rosh Hashanah at the end of the third parak, quoted by Rashi, says, "Bizman shemistaklim klapei malo, umishabdim es libam laviyam b'shamayim," then everything is fine. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands, but that wasn't really what was going on at all. What was really going on was that people were davening. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands, they remembered to daven, and when he put his hands down, they didn't remember to daven. Now this Mishnah is written in Rosh Hashanah in the context of a series of Mishnayos that have to do with Kavona in mitzvahs. And so this is an example that's brought, as is another example brought, which I don't want to get involved in. This is an example that's brought about Kavonah. And everybody knows because Rav Chaim explained it very carefully. And the Rav said it many times that the essence of the mitzvah of tefillah is Kavonah, and so B'nai Yisrael, as Rashi said, we're davening. And in order to daven, you have to have Kavonah, but still, there is something that I find annoying. If I look at Perek Yudalid, we find that this problem had already come up. B'nai Yisrael find themselves in the vice of Yam Suf on one side and Mitzrayim, the Mitzrim, on the other. And they found this difficult, B'nai Yisrael did. They didn't see any way out. And Moshe Rabbeinu is cajoling them and talking to them and saying, you've got to look right, you've got to look good, you've got to stand straight. And the B'nai Yisrael are saying, like, why did we come here? What are we doing here? And is this how Jewish history is supposed to come to an end? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Elaham al tiru is yatzbu ru'u es yishuas Hashem asher yaseh lachem hayom. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't worry. Don't worry. Everything will be just fine. He didn't say, daven. He just said, don't worry. Hashem yilochem lochem v'atem tacharisha, which sounds like it's all arranged. It's in the bag. Don't worry. Vayoma Hashem el Moshe matitzak elai. So Rashi says, Lamadnu sheya Moshe omed mispalel ba Hakadosh Baruch Hu lois ato larech betfilo she Yisrael nesurim betzora. So here Hakadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Davin, Davin. Everybody knows that if you're at war, you have to be at war. If you are davening, you should be a davening. Anybody who mixes the two up hasn't learned a simple lesson that you can't daven and go to war at the same time. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who taught the lesson, taught Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, davening is not for war. And davening is not come instead of war. And yet when Amalek came, Moshe Rabbeinu is holding his hands up high in the air, davening, cajoling people to daven. So we don't understand either. We don't understand why it is that Moshe Rabbeinu, by holding his hands up, created davening. What has that got to do with davening? And why is it when he put his hands down, they davened less? They davened more? And furthermore, we don't understand what the issue was. You daven when there's time to daven. You don't daven when there's a war going on. I mean, if there was a lesson to be learned from Kriyas Yam Suf, wasn't that the lesson? Wasn't that the lesson that they should have known or should have learned? There's another problem of Parshanut. B'yidei Moshe Kvedim Vaikach Evan Vayasimu Tachtova Yeshiva Lehem Varam Vachutam Chubi Adam Mizechot Mizechot. Every single phrase in the pasuk is noteworthy. But the phrase that I'm interested in right now is this one. Vayihi Yadov Emuna. Yadov Emuna. Some relationship between Yadov and Emuna. Yes, I know the Ramban says. No, it's not that. It doesn't mean that. It means something else, the Ramban says. It says there's a pasuk in Yeshaya which is printed incorrectly in most of the Rambans. Utkatem yaseid b'mokom ne'eman. You stick a tent peg into a strong place. Sheperusho b'mokom chozok u'miskayim. Chozok u'miskayim. Ve'i yodov chozok u'miskayim. His hands were strong. Let's say he knew. In either case, I don't really understand it very well. If his hands were strong, so why did they have to be strong? If the point was that they should daven, so let them daven.
I mean, didn't they get the idea at the beginning? Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, let's daven. Here my hand, look at my hands, let's daven. So that should be enough. You mean they were so controlled by Moshe Rabbeinu, some kind of a Pavlovian reaction that they thought that, don't daven, do daven. And then Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were strong. And in any event, when I read the Pasuk, Vayihi Yadav Emunah, as I state, it says that somehow the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu represented Emunah, and I don't like that. Because we are the abstract daveners, aren't we? That's what they always told me. They say we are capable of davening in the abstract. You know, those other people and those other religions, I'm not sure exactly what religions anymore, they're not so good on the abstract. They need a thing. They have to look at something. You know, I don't know. I grew up in a shul. I grew up in a shul when I was a kid. That's what I mean. That's what I mean when I say I grew up. That I was then, I was a kid. It was a shul. That was an imitation of European shuls. They built it like European shuls. You know, European shuls, they used to have a balcony upstairs where the women sat, and these days very high windows. You know, a shul was not a shul if it wasn't three or four stories high and had a dome. Now, this shul that I grew up in, I never noticed it till I left, because I grew up in the shuls. I never noticed it, but it had a very, very interesting array of lions and leopards and eagles and all kinds of drawings of astrological symbols that never occurred to me, because I grew up in the shul. It never occurred to me to ask anybody why all those things were there or what they had to do exactly with abstract davening. But in retrospect, it occurred to me to wonder about it. So I'm sharing my wonder. Vayihi Yadav Emunah. Vayihi Yadav Emunah. If somebody would tell me that it had something to do with davening, that the Yadayim have something to do with davening, I would say, no, it can't be. And so if it can't be, you have the interesting Hasidisha kasha. You know, like, we are trained, we don't mind these kashas. But the Hasidisha, it bothered them. They always said, we say, Vayihi Yadav Emunah. The Pshat is the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. The Pshat is the Rambara. The Pshat is this, right? The Hasidim, they said, well, if that's the Pshat, so why does it say, Vayihi Yadav Emunah? That's a Hasidish kasha, because it's an annoying kasha, and the Hasidim had this way of being annoyed. So I want to know two things about this parsha. I want to know first what the Yadayim, what role did the Yadayim of Moshe Rabbeinu play? And secondly, I'd like to understand, if we can, what Vayihi Yadav Emunah meant. Now, the Rav, in an important article called The Lonely Man of Faith, established certain principles of a prayer. That is to say, the Rav explained to us what it is that we are trying to do when we daven. And I'd like to review with you, I'm sure that you have seen this article and retain some of the insights, but I'd like to nevertheless review one or two of them with you. About the lonely man of faith, I also have a story to tell. Should I tell it? When I was a student in yeshiva, there was a period of time that I worked for the Tradition magazine. Rabbi Wurzberger was then the editor of Tradition, and he asked me once if I met him someplace, and he asked me if I would like to be the executive assistant. I think that's what he asked. I said, I don't know if I want to be it, because I don't know what it is. He says, it's a very important job and we need you. So, you know, being young and unassuming at the time, I said yes, hoping that this really meant something. Like what he said, you know, really meant something. So a little while, I didn't do anything. No one asked me to do anything. I didn't do anything. I had a letter that says that I said that I was the executive assistant. So I figured that, you know, maybe at least it was a career launching move of some sort. And I got a call. Rabbi Wurzberger calling Blavinder. Yes. You're the executive assistant. Yes. This is what you have to do. The Rav has promised us an article for tradition. You have to get it. I say, what do you mean? And what does that mean? He says, look, you have to badger him all the time. I say, for example, once he says, well, when he comes to Shia, you have to stand out of the elevator. And when he comes out of the elevator, you have to say, Rebbe with the article. And when he leaves Shia, you have to say, Rebbe with the article. So I did it one day. I came out of the elevator. I said, Rebbe, where's the article? So he said, stop bothering me. I called up Wurzberger, Rabbi Wurzberger, and I said, I can't do it. He says, you have to do it. So this was. So then there was this campaign to convince me that my role in Jewish history was going to be to get this article, The Lonely Man of Faith. And eventually I got it, but I didn't get it from the Rav. I got it because the Rav had, for some reason, or given it to Rav Aaron to proofread at a later stage, and for some reason Rav Aaron was the one who actually gave it up, and that's the article. So I have a special relationship to this article. The Rav says on page 35, the Rav says, prayer is basically an awareness of man finding himself in the presence of and addressing himself to his Maker, and to pray is one connotation only to stand before God. Now this is something that is, I think, so well known to all of us that it's hard to imagine today that someone actually had to say this. But certainly for us, prayer, I mean, and you understand, that's what we understand, the chiluch that Rav Chaim made in the first of the pieces in the Rav Chaim on the Rambam about kavanah in tefillah, that essentially, once you achieve a level of standing before a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then you are in the context of a prayer. You are a davener. Now, I just want to point out that this is not exactly the same as Rashi's position when he explains the pasuk v'hadam ayin la'avodes ha'adama. In that pasuk, Rashi points out that man had a certain function within creation, and the way man was to fulfill that function was to daven. In other words, there's a pragmatic functional aspect to prayer, to standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asking for rain, which is germane to the essential character of man in creation. It's not just that I look around and I see what am I missing. And I say, I'd like to have a bigger car, or I'd like it to rain, or I'd like it not to rain. So I go and I turn to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. But somehow the world had to be completed. It had to be polished. It had to be finished. The Ramban explains also on the same pasuk, you know, he quotes the Chazal that there's a malach in heaven. Every blade of grass has a malach in heaven that makes it grow, and that malach has to be directed by the Ribbono Shel Olam to make the blade of grass grow, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is waiting for the tefillah of man in order that that directive be given. So that according to Rashi, according to all those Chazals that Rashi bases himself on, tefillah is not simply, I think, attitudinal, such that it represents a capacity that we have to place ourselves before the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but it also represents our obligation to maintain the kiyum of the world, of Shamayim V'Oretz, through our tefillah. But the emphasis in this line in The Lonely Man of Faith is on existential tefillah, like
there is a certain existential relationship to tefillah, which is represented again in the Gemara in the beginning, when the Gemara talks about kavana in tefillah, and the Gemara points out that there is this existential need to place yourselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is what the Rav is referring to. However, the Rav expands this idea in talking about prayer and discusses the covenantal experience, what the Rav called the covenantal experience of being together with and talking to God. And then that covenantal experience means, because the conversation that we have with the Rebbeinu Shlomo ultimately reflects an agreement, a covenant of sorts. It enhances it. The implication of davening is therefore strengthening all the agreements that I have with the Rebbeinu. Standing before God, as Rav Nachman points out, standing before God is an overwhelming experience in which there is nothing else but God, and therefore my awareness suddenly of the contracts that I have signed, of the agreements that I have entered into, of the obligations that I have accepted upon myself, become obvious, and I focus on them. And therefore, prayer and covenant become the same thing, in that one cannot see himself as standing to God and not thinking at that moment of the obligations and of the responsibilities that you have. And therefore, prayer is by its nature, just as standing before God is by its nature a human response, covenant is by its nature the implication of standing before God. He, Rabbi Soloveitchik, pointed out that this implies two different kinds of relationships. One is the relationship that he calls prophetic. In other words, standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu implies my renewed assessment or awareness of the covenantal agreements, of all the obligations that I have, which therefore imposes upon me the need to spread the word of this covenant wherever I go, so that the prophetic covenantal arrangement implies, as the Rav taught us, that standing before God is not something that I can do and just walk away from, but the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me, and that the covenant is alive, and that there are obligations that I've accepted and that all of the other Jews have accepted upon themselves, all of that implies that I've got to go out and tell somebody. I've got to go and tell the story. I have an obligation. Prayer is not something that I do just to enhance myself, my own psyche, or the personality that I've developed, but prayer, once it is achieved, creates obligations. And then the Rav goes on and makes another point. And the Rav says that not only is prayer prophetic, that is to say, that prayer imposes upon me the need to spread the word of the covenant, but, he says, the prayerful community like must not remain only the I and the he. That is to say, I who am praying and he, HaKadosh Baruch. But the Rav says that the inclusion of others is indispensable. Man should avoid praying for himself alone. The plural
prayer is of central halachic significance. When disaster strikes, one must not be immersed completely in his own passional destiny, thinking exclusively of himself, being concerned only with himself, petitioning God merely for himself. The foundation of efficacious and noble prayer in human solidarity and sympathy, the covenantal awareness of existential togetherness, of sharing and experience the travail and suffering of those for whom majestic Adam the first is no concern. Only Adam the second knows the art of praying, since he confronts God with petition of the many. And this perhaps is where the Rav may in fact interface with the Rashi of the Hadam Ai, because the Rav says, contrary to what you might think, the way that, for example, the Kuzari describes it in a famous passage in the third part, paragraph 19, that we have an obligation to the welfare of others. We have an obligation to be concerned about others. We have an obligation to think that the others are also important. Now, you might say that this is a kind of a chesed that we do. This is a kind of a good deed. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu davened for Avimelech, and he was answered first. Right? Rashi says, that somehow that there's even a personal aspect to davening for others. It's good for me to daven for others, but that's not what I think that the Rav means. When the Rav speaks about the covenantal community as being the source of prayer, I think that what the Rav was saying was that in prayer, if we stand absolutely alone, if we stand before God as though we are the only creation in the world, then we are somehow denying that act of creation which we find ourselves. And that, the Rav said, is incomprehensible. Any prayer, the content of the prayer, has to be tikkun ha'olam in the sense that the whole world is our responsibility, not the Mishnah in Gittin. Tikkun ha'olam, as people say today, people say tikkun ha'olam, but I think that the Rav was referring to our responsibility, which is found in those words of Rashi explaining the Adam Ayin Lavodes Ha'adama, the responsibility for the continuation of the creation and for the enhancing of the world in which we live. That cannot be focusing in on an I-E relationship, as though I am here alone with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyochol, and I'd like to talk about myself. Is that itself, that statement, that position, that way of looking at things, is counterindicated. That's not prayer, because prayer is a fundamental human possibility, and it falls into the wider context of the covenantal obligations, which are the maintenance of the world. So that just as when I speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I think of the covenant and I have to go out and tell everybody else who's not doing mitzvahs, who thinks they're doing mitzvahs, who does the mitzvahs, who's not doing the mitzvahs well as they should, I have to go out and tell them. So too, when I stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've got to express the fact that I am the man in the world. I am part of the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, but not part of the place in which I am standing. Part of the totality of the created world, and I accept that responsibility. And so the Rav explained to us that prayer represents the essential focus of the human relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that relationship
is one that is connected to and depends on my awareness of my place in the covenantal community. On the one hand, prayer has got to lead me to concern for others. On the other hand, I understand that I can't bring myself to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu unless this concern for others is represented. And so the tefillah that we daven, the Shemoneh Esrei that we daven, is always in the plural. Not because it's good or it's a chesed or when I think of others maybe I'll get a better deal, but because there is no other possibility. There's no other way for us as human beings to daven. This was the thrust of a part of what the Rav taught us in this article, The Lonely Man of Faith, about tefillah. There is another encounter with Amalek. Bamidbar Perikov Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Interestingly enough, this encounter, which takes place in the parasha of Chukas, also takes place after certain difficulties, especially the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did something wrong when water was coaxed out of the rock. What it was that Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong remains a mystery. However, the wrongness of it is clearly stated in the Torah. The Aveira is described in no uncertain terms. And the punishment in turn, the punishment for the Aveira, is clear to us and well known. What remains a bit of a mystery, as I have said, is the fact that we don't know exactly what the Aveira was. Here, again, in the parasha of Bishalach, in the parasha of Chukas, just as in the parasha of Bishalach, the problem of water was followed by the attack of Amalek. In Perikof Aleph, the Chumash says, "Vayishmak nani melech harad, Yoshev ha-negev, ki bo Yisrael derech ha-asarim, vayilachem bi-Yisrael, vayish mimenu shevi." Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, they heard that Aaron died and there were no Anani HaKavod, and Amalek was always waiting to make trouble for Bnei Yisrael. Yoshev HaNegev, Rashi says, Amalek. Even though it says in the Chumash Yoshev HaNegev, but clearly the intention is Amalek. That's where they were. They try to hide out and try to hide themselves, dress differently, acting differently. Vaidag Yisrael Nedel Hashem Vayomar Im Noson Titenis Om Hazeh Biyodi Vachramti Es Orehem. This time, Vayida Neder, Lashem Vayomah, a Neder recognizing the importance of words and promise and obligation. In Noson Titenes or Oma Zebi or Divachramti Esoreha. Also, a relationship, responsibility. Amalek had to be destroyed, Bnei Israel accepts the obligation, a Neder. A kind of a tefillah, a kind of an agreement, a kind of an awakening of Bnei Yisrael to their responsibilities. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael, vayitenes aknani. This time Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't stand, he doesn't hold his hands up. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to the voice of Bnei Yisrael when they were davening. For they were accepting responsibility, they were assuming title to the world to some extent. They understood about covenantal relationships because that's what a neder is. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael vayitenes aknani vayacharem eshem vesoreihem vayikroshem amokoim chorma. So Bnei Yisrael was successful, at least to some extent, in fighting the battle against Amalek, and the dramatics of the end of the parasha of B'Shalach are done away with. Bnei Yisrael understand what they have to do, how they have to act, in spite of the fact that they are also facing a difficult situation. I'd like to remind you of one other pasuk. Perikov of the previous perik by Yishlach Moshe Malachim Mikodesh El Melech Adom Ko Amar Achicha Yisrael Atoya Data Eskot Lo Hashem Mitzvasonu Ve'yerdu Ovo Seinu Mitzrayim Ve'neshu Mitzrayim Yomim Rabim Ve'yerei Olor HaMitzvah Ovo Seinu Va'nitzak El Hashem Va'yishma Koleinu. Moshe Rabbeinu introduces himself to Edom, to the king of Edom, by saying, we had a history, we were here, we were there, we went good times and bad times, you know. He said, but I want you to know who we are. Ve'zan en nir, Am Yisrael. Va'nitzak el Hashem ha'yishma koileinu. You think Edom, the Melech of Edom, understood what Moshe Rabbeinu meant? He said, we're a covenant. We're together. We have the prophetic aspect of covenant. And we have the achvah aspect of covenant. We talk to each other and we understand from each other. We stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'nitzak el Hashem v'yishma keileinu. I don't know if Edom understood, but he had to say it. He had to say, listen, this is who we are. What do you mean this is who we are? Va'nitzak el Hashem. So Rashi says, like you would think, va'nitzak el Hashem. I mean, after all, they were in Mitzrayim. Things were bad in Mitzrayim. Everything was going wrong. So I mean, who are they going to scream at? They screamed at whoever they could. They screamed at God as well. And you know that the prayer of Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim was problematic. Rashi says, "Va'mitzak el Hashem va'yishma kolein." This takes place before Amalek, right? Before the story of Amalek. This is Perikov and that's Perikov Aleph. Even though the numbers are goyish, but they're helpful. So let it be. Let the goyim, Zavzav to the Tanakh to give numbers to the prakim. Good? Bevrocha sheberchadu avinu hakol kol Yaakov. You understand? Rashi says, that's what the pasuk says, Vayishma Koleinu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard our voice. So Rashi says, you know, in the way that we learn Rashi, right, is the Chumash to say he heard our voice.
Why couldn't Rashi, why couldn't the Chumash say, and he heard? Then they said, oh, that he heard our voice. I mean, what else was there to hear? That's what we did. We write postcards. No, we're not writing postcards. I write postcards, I write email. We're screaming at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sabai Yishma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard. So Rashi says, you know why it says B'shma Kaleinu? Because this represents a metamorphosis in B'nai Yisrael. And what's the metamorphosis in B'nai Yisrael? Babrocha Shebarchanu Avinu. The bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov. Bracha. 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 Not comment. Bracha. And what's the bracha? Hakoko Yaakov. That Yaakov, they've got it. They've got the coal. They can do it. That's the bracha. It's not Hakoko Yaakov Yadai V'Dei Esav. Confusion. Name. Rashi says, it's mamish like a Hasidic shtickle Torah. Mamish. I don't know that much about it, but it's mamish. A kol Yaakov, Rashi says, it's a brocha. And what was the brocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Yaakov Avinu? You have to have the kol. You have to be able to do it by davening. And there was actually a Hasidic Rebbe, the Sfas Emes, who did have something to say about that. And the Sfas Emes says, oh, you know what the pshat is. But pasuk vayishma knani, over chazal shama shemes aro v'ifsik, misayim shaboy shederach ha'asore v'inei omru chazal. He says, you know how chazal understood this whole story? He said, im lo sholchu meraglim, if not for the fact that B'nai Yisrael would have sent the meraglim and got into trouble, as law you treat him like clay Zion, then they would never have had to fight in Eretz Yisrael. Clay Zion, they wouldn't have had to have implements of destruction. Dechsiv, what's Dechsiv? What's going to come now? You don't know what the Sfas Emes says, but you guess. Ayodayim Yedei Esau. Rashi said the brocha was Hakol Kol Yaakov, and the Sfas Emes says no, that's only half the brocha. The other half of the brocha is Hayodayim Yedei Esav. But what's the pshat? That it's in the nature of Esav that when Esav wants to build a palace to the king, so what does he have to do? He has to get a hammer, and he has to hammer. But B'nai Yisrael, Rashi says in Sukkot, Dav Mem Ayomer Aleph, Rashi says that when the Beis HaMikdash will be built ultimately, it's going to come down min hashamayim, just like that. And one looks at Rashi and says, gee, okay, why did Rashi have to say that? What would be so bad about building the Beis HaMikdash? And the answer is, Hakol Kol Yaakov means, not that B'nai Yisrael started davening when they were in trouble. No! Hakol Kol Yaakov, what Rashi means is that, in fact, the intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is represented by the words HaKol Kol Yaakov, is the way B'nai Yisrael should do everything. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. In other words, like you say a shtickel Torah, and you did it. Because that's all there is to do. But Hayodayim Yedei Esav, Hayodayim Yedei Esav, that's what it means. If you can't do it, so you have to go and bang the nail into the wood. I mean, what can you do? What can you do? It's Pugvaker. Pugvaker. If you stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam and you know how to daven, that means you know something about the prophetic obligation of covenant, and you know something about your obligation that comes, that derives from the fact that you are part of the world, that you have an obligation. If you know those two things, then you have a kol kol Yaakov, and when you finish a deal with the Ribbono Shel Olam Kavi Yochol, then it's done, then it happens. There is no nafka mida between machshava and maase, and that's what kol kol Yaakov means, and that's what the Sfas Emes says. But if not for the fact that they were sent the Meraglim, that's what Chazal mean. If they didn't send the Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael, if not for the fact that they sent the Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael, they would just gone to Eretz Yisrael, and everybody would have bowed down to them, which is the way it should have been. Which way it should have been, because it was right. I mean, how can wrong stand up to right?
Oh, only when right is not as right as it might be. So HaKol Kol Yaakov is the nature of Yaakov Avinu. That's what Klal Yisrael are. They are the people of Tefillah. And people of Tefillah mean that you can do the deal, Kavi Yochel, with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. You can make an arrangement. You can make an arrangement that Kodesh Boch, and you can say, Eretz Yisrael, you can say that the world should be as it really should be. Furthermore, the Sfas Emes says, Al Yidei Sheitzrachnu L'Klei Zayin B'Derech Milchoma Zeh Derech HaAsorim L'Chein Kodam L'Hem Amolek. And that's why Amolek reappeared. That's why Amolek reappeared in the history of Bnei Yisrael at this time. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Bnei Yisrael to understand, that if they go to Eretz Yisrael, they will be able to be victorious, even though they're not going to be able to be victorious alone with the Kol Kol Yaakov, but they're going to have to also be partially Hayadayim Yedei Esav. But the victory over Amalek at this time, before they go into Eretz Yisrael, is the raya, is the proof that HaKadosh Baruch Hu presented to Bnei Yisrael, that the integration of HaKol Kol Yaakov and Yadayim de Esav is Ratsui. And so if all of this is reasonable, the question is, where were Bnei Yisrael the first time around? What was the position of Bnei Yisrael the first time around? So if we understand what the Rav said, that prayer is not simply the ability to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to produce or be involved in a situation which is Vayaminu Bashem, right? That's not what prayer is. Because that kind of situation, the situation of Vayaminu Bashem Moshe Abdo, as later on even Matan Torah is a situation that doesn't necessarily become integrated into the personality of the person who is alive in the world that God created. Because he will always question and say, yes, I had that experience. Yes, I was La'avdil. I was in that ashram. Yes, I sat around and we had that party and we were all high on whatever we were high on. But then when it's over, is it perhaps over? By Aminu Bashem Moshe Avdo, no one denied it. No one said that it didn't happen. No one claimed that there was no point to it all. But what now? What happens now? And so people didn't understand. Was there enough food to eat? Was there enough drink water to drink? Was Mitzrayim a better option than a desert? Somehow the ongoing connection became difficult. Ma titzak elai, the Rebbeinu Shalom said to Moshe Rabbeinu before Kriyas Yamsuf, because you're not yet the people of HaKol Kol Yaakov. You're not the people who are going to be able to create history through davening. I mean, that doesn't seem to be who you are as yet. That's who you might be and who we might have been, if not for the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim. So Moshe Rabbeinu confronting Amalek, leading Bnei Yisrael. Imagine, the people are not who they should be. And the way that Amalek has to be attacked or repulsed is through Hayodayim Yedei Esav. And Moshe Rabbeinu's tafkid, Moshe Rabbeinu's job at that time, is not to allow Am Yisrael to become Hayodayim Yedei Esav. Even though, at the end, the Sfas Emes says that when Amalek came and attacked Bnei Yisrael by Midbar Perikov Aleph, the purpose of that attack was that Bnei Yisrael should learn that through a combination of Kol Kol Yaakov and Hayodayim Yedei Esav, they would still be victorious when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu had this educational problem that he had to deal with. I mean, what happens if they go in there and they win? What happens if they just run into Amalek and swish, swash, swish, You know, you have Yehoshua ben Nun, and all of a sudden they take out 50 guys and they're archers and with swords and throwing and spears and all, and they win. I mean, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It'll be how Yodayim Esav became, Yodayim Yodei Esav will become Yodayim Yodei Yaakov. And then what would be with Klal Yisrael? The problem that Moshe Rabbeinu had was, how do you take the people who don't yet know how to daven, who are not able to be as they should be, a Kol Kol Yaakov, bring them to war, emerge victorious, and maintain in them the desire nevertheless to be a Kol Kol Yaakov, to understand that they have not fulfilled their destiny, that beating Amalek in the battlefield with the Yodayim Yedei Esav, well, that's not it. And so Moshe Rabbeinu legislated on this one occasion that davening and warfare would be concomitant, would take place at the same time. And Moshe Rabbeinu further taught B'nai Yisrael that Yodov, the Yad of Moshe Rabbeinu, is Emuna, meaning that even when Am Yisrael acts out the Yodayim Yodei Esav in history, we have to force ourselves, determine for ourselves, that it's the Kol Kol Yaakov, and that for us, Yodov Emuna, Emuna, and not Yah, not the Yad of Esav, but the Yad of Yaakov, the Kol Kol Yaakov, the Yodov Emuna. And so Moshe Rabbeinu said, "Well, my hands are up, daven." And when they stopped daving, they lost. Even though that's not the way it'll ever work in the world. If you have the skuyot, you'll win. And if chas v'shalom, you're bereft of skuyot, the result will be bad. But it won't be because instead of shooting, you were davening. That will never happen. That will never happen again. The way I understand it is that the raw of it is discussion of the first two chapters of Bereishis, reconstructed for us, Adam 1 and Adam 2, when the Rav explained to us something about tefillah. Tefillah did not represent for the Rav a human capacity, so to speak, a bonus, something that one might engage in if you wanted to be spiritual. But that tefillah represented the essence of the personality of man. And the personality of man is described in the Torah as related to his perception of himself as being created by God. And so when you stand before God, you have the covenantal obligations of prophecy, but to spread the word of the mitzvot. Further, when you stand before God, you must come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the manner of Tikkun Olam. And that's the promise that Yaakov Avinu received from Yitzchak, HaKol Kol Yaakov. You will have this capacity. But in the real world, while the Rav created the categories which help us to understand what tefillah is about and where tefillah can be effective and what sort of human characteristics make up tefillah, it was Moshe Rabbeinu who had to turn the prototypical theory into the lemaise of human action on the level of B'nai Yisrael. It was not enough for B'nai Yisrael for someone to tell them that they had the capacity of Kol Kol Yaakov. But B'nai Yisrael had to go through the events of Kriyas Yam Suf and Vayaminu Bashem, of Amalek number one, and the difficulties and the Vayi Yodav Emunah, and then finally Amalek number two with a Kol Kol Yaakov. And even though we understand that we live in a world which is not entirely for us, Hakol Kol Yaakov, but it is unfortunately tempered with the need for Yadayim and the Yadayim that act in the world. Nevertheless, we learn the lesson of the Brocha, and the lesson of the Brocha is about potential and about capacity and about who we might be as Klal Yisrael. And even though we may not as yet be able to fulfill the role of Hakol Kol Yaakov, the history of Am Yisrael Yitzias Mitzrayim and Moshe Rabbeinu and the attack of Amalek on Klal Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim and then before they came into Eretz Yisrael, those lessons teach us something about who we might be and how we also, even in the world of Yadayim, have to aspire, have to work, to follow the directives, the plan, which the Rav explained to us so clearly, that there is an option for Hakol Kol Yaakov, even Ba'olameinu Zeh.
Well, that's a good idea.
Come on.
Gentlemen, the schedule is as follows.
How do we act with the auditorium, which is to the left. You could wash either right here to the right.
You
don't want to?
Yeah,
definitely.
Just two flights down.
Is that the first meeting?
What are you leaving?
What are you leaving? 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock?
Yeah. Good. We're going to have the Shir after the Shir. We'll have 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 the